Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What to Read Next podcast helps to build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lori Amin interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then this show. Hi, Jen. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Jen Comfort, and I write rom-coms about really hot nerds with cool jobs. Mm-hmm. And I am originally from Portland, Oregon, where I now live still with my dog and cat, and then also foster cats, and also many backyard animals.
Right, so I'm curious about the fostering cats. Like, how did you get started? Because I'm actually curious for myself. So this is like a personal question that I'm like, you know, tell me all the secrets, you know.
Well, first you have to, you know, love and enjoy pain, the pain of falling in love with the creature, and then like he's having to like say goodbye to it all the time. Yeah. So that's like the first prerequisite.
Okay.
I don't know why I did this to myself, because I actually started fostering dogs over the summer.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any free time, but I just thought like someone had posted on Nextdoor about the foster agency that they work through. And it's like a nonprofit called Peace for Pups here in Portland. And I think most cities have like several foster dog nonprofits, but they basically get these dogs from Mexico where they are just like stray dogs on the streets, and they have like no medical care. They've never been inside. They've never been trained, but these are like really pro-social dogs. So ones that like come up to people and are just like really sweet. And so they feel like they have the best chance of being adopted. So they bring them up here to Oregon because we're like a no-kill state too. So even if the dogs end up in shelters, like they won't be killed. And then the fosters like me take them in and train them and like potty train them because most of them are not potty trained, and basically get them to be like a good dog that's ready for adoption, so that when, you know, like your average person comes and adopts them, they aren't like getting this completely untrained animal and there's less of a chance of getting returned. But so I started doing dogs, and then I had been like, okay, I need a break from this because my heart has been broken too many times. And then someone had seen a cat on Facebook that needed to be fostered. It was like abandoned by its owners in a parking lot when they moved away. And I like could not say no. And so I did this to myself again. So that is a very long-winded way of saying, please sign up to do this, because dogs and cats need the love and a place to go.
Yeah, I probably would do cats. I think I grew up with dogs, but then I became a cat person. The way I ended up becoming a cat person was I was in grad school and I was like stressed out. And I was like, and then one girl in grad school found a stray kitten in the middle of the highway in BW Parkway. And so she took her in, but she couldn't keep her. So she posted on the group listserv, like, she's like, I have this kitten and just like needs a home. We're just not figuring it out. And so she went to I was like, oh, I'm interested, because like Kat said someone, I was like, I'm interested, but somebody else picked her off first. And I was like, okay, well, if it's meant to be, it's not to be. So the person, she was like, she's too active for me. And I was like, okay. So I went the next down the list. She was named by somebody else. And I was like, okay, she got the name, so I'm just gonna like take care of her. And I took care of her for like 3 years. And then I had a really busy job and I was never home, and she started like needing more attention. So I ended up taking her to my parents. And so she became my parents' cat, although they consider her their grandchildren, their grandchild, you know, because I didn't have children. So she lived with us for 16 years and she was like the best cat ever. And so we became a cat family thanks to her. So
I will say cats are much harder to foster than dogs, I find, not because of like they're very easy to care for. It's just that they bond to you so much more. Yeah. Like dogs love everyone, right? Like these foster dogs that I had, everyone loved them. They loved everyone. But this cat was like clinging to me. Like he's like, you're my only person. And I'm like, this is breaking my heart.
Yeah, I think I may be one of those foster fails who may just keep them afterwards. I mean, like, I'll just adopt you, you know, we'll start a press trial. But I remember going to my therapist at a time and I was like, I was like, I remember being like the first night she just woke me up and she was like, pay attention to me. And I was like, I remember being like, this is too much work. My therapist was like, no, this is good for you. Like, this is good, like learning skill for you. Like, give someone else love and give someone attention. And so I think it might be fun. I think I might do this, like, you know, sometime in the near future. Yeah.
Those are like the gateway words. The next thing you know, you have 20 cats. That's what's going to happen to me. Is everyone's like, you're going to foster Bella's cat. I'm like, no, I can't. Cause then I can't take in more fosters. But somehow you just keep finding a way to get more.
It is all good. You know, I'm fine with just being the dispenser lady with the cat lady. I'm fine with that. So
I'm ready to accept this fate.
Yeah, it is not a bad life to live. So awesome. So let's chat about your writing. So when did you start writing? Like, what led you to start writing books?
Well, I've always been a very indoor child. So instead of doing sports, I volunteered at the library as a child. So super cool. Lots of friends that were fictional. And, you know, just being around books so much, I've always been really into reading. And of course, when you spend so much time in like the great church of bookdom, aka libraries, you always dream of becoming this glamorous author who spends their days just coming up with amazing, wonderful words, like all of your favorite authors. And it always sounds and looks really cool, like in movies and in your imagination. You're like, this author just gets to wake up whenever they want, make themselves a nice cup of tea, and then casually stroll over to their desk and watch the birds as they bust out like a best-selling novel in like a few days.
Yeah,
that's how I imagined my future would be. And so I would say reality was a very rude awakening when I learned I had to like get a real job and go to college for something practical. So I ended up going into I started off as an astrophysics major, which is a whole other story of things that were impractical. But then I ended up working in restaurants for over 15 years before I finally decided that I was going to try to pursue writing. And it took another 5 years of serving part-time, which I still do, before I got an agent, and just then another 2 books before I got a book published. So it was a journey, but I think I've made my 13-year-old self very proud.
I think so too. And I know, I think it's like, I think we have an idea when we're children of like, our life is going to be so glamorous when we're adults. And then when reality is like, oh no, adulting is like a whole different level of like,
it really is. I'm like, why do I have to pay all these? Like, can't someone else do this for me? Like, this isn't be my job.
I need I need multiple wives. Like, I understand the whole sister wife situation, because I'm like, I need someone to just manage the household chores, the stuff, the specific.
Can I convince all my friends to leave their husbands? We can start a commune where we just like take care of each other's kids and animals, and then everybody gets a rotating day off. I think that would be ideal.
Yeah. So, and in terms of reading, what kind of books were you reading when you were a child? Like when you're like a young teenager?
So I really first got started at reading when I think some relative got me the first 50 books of the Nancy Drew series. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really like care that much about the mysteries. I just wanted to know when Nancy was going to hook up with Ned. Probably too young in my life to be interested in when Nancy was going to hook up with Ned. But I read through all 50 books and I was like, wait a minute, they never get together. Like, they just like casually mentioned. So where's the rest of this? And then, you know, while I was volunteering at the library, I read a lot of sci-fi and fantasy, and I kept finding that the thing I was looking for was the romantic subplot. And then eventually I found the romance section and realized that I didn't have to sit through all this boring plot. I could actually just skip right to the good stuff. I could skip right to Nancy and Ned getting it on for 350 pages. So once I went there, I didn't really ever look back, although I do still really enjoy sci-fi and fantasy, but
yeah.
I tend to enjoy it when it's like a little bit more risque or like, you know, like comedy, like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's like, it tells us something, like our books in a childhood, which tells us what kind of reader we'll be, like in some ways, like if you found Nancy Drew and like what you're looking for, like you may be a mystery thriller, you know, reader, or if you're looking for the love story, I'm like finding like, there's a whole genre that has like happily ever afters, you know, and there's like a whole genre that just deals with that relationship as a primary thing, you know, It tells
Yeah,
us.
I think there's something really reassuring about the happily ever after, especially as you do become an adult and you realize that life is so full of like surprises that are usually unpleasant. And I developed a lot of anxiety as I got older. And like, I think it's very soothing for my anxiety to just know that no matter what the author puts you through, there's going to be a happy ending because we don't always have that guarantee in real life.
I agree. So let's chat about the Midnight Duet. What kind of angst do you put this through? Tell us the other
So, Midnight Duet is my modern rom-com, gender-flipped retelling of Phantom of the Opera. So, I, was a very gothy, young child, and that was probably the first and the only musical that I ever saw, and I was so into it. It was like Beauty and the Beast vibes, like I love a good anti-hero, or morally gray, hero. And I just thought like the music was so extra, and I love good glam rock. So this is kind of my homage to Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera, as well as the 2004 masterpiece with Gerard Butler and Emmy Rossum. So this book is like it's just vibes and sex scenes and like and comedy all strung together by a thinly recreated Phantom of the Opera plot. Highly recommend it.
Love this. I love this. This is like perfect for Broadway. It's like Broadway's like, lovers who just like, let's just imagine a romance novel based on your favorite Broadway play
Yeah.
musical. So
Yeah, it's quite the undertaking because like it's a very high concept like pitch, right? Like it sounds really catchy, and then you have to sit down and write it and be like, how am I going to translate this to the page? Especially like in our modern times, right? Because you can get away with a lot when you're ostensibly in a Paris opera house in the 1870s or whatever. But now it's like modern world, where are you going to set this thing? So I put it in Vegas, of course, because that was the only place that was extra enough to really fit the bill.
Yes. And so what was the research process look like for setting a book in Vegas? Did you, because I'm assuming this was during due to pandemic time, so probably there was not a lot of traveling that happened,
Yeah. I mean, I'd been to Vegas before. I actually had a bad time because I was led to believe that when you go to Vegas, it's just like all partying and like money and stuff. But like, I've learned that you will just go broke really fast in Vegas. Like, everything's so expensive. You can't even afford to gamble because you're paying like $15 for a watered down drink and then being like, I don't know if I can afford the $30 buffet in the morning. So I wasn't a huge fan of Vegas. And like the shows are so expensive too. But I had been to Vegas and I wanted to set this in like a fictional town of Paris outside of Vegas. So it was sort of like I got to make up what the Paris hotel would be like if it was just a whole town.
Ooh, I like this. I like this idea of like setting up Paris, which is part of the original part, but at the same time, put it in a city like Vegas where, it's a make-believe city, like, Sin City. So,
Yeah, everything about this book is very tongue in cheek. Like it's self-aware. It knows that it's ridiculous and it knows that it's over the top. So it's sort of inviting the reader to be like, all right, get it. We're in Paris, but it's not really Paris. We're making fun of the fact that like this is, a fake town. So I think it's not for everyone, but it will definitely appeal to the sort of reader that is, willing to just hang up your believability and go along for the ride.
Yeah, awesome. And so, and the book is available on Kindle Unlimited, read and listen. So, if you want to listen, if you're an audiobook listener, because a lot of podcast listeners may be audiobook listeners, they can listen for free. So, which is
Yeah,
kind
and I do want to say the audiobook actors did an amazing job because the main hero is German and so is his band. And so I was really worried about them doing like German accents, and they did a fantastic job. Like it is hilarious and they great acting.
That's amazing. Oh, so excited. So let's chat to some book recommendations. Do you have any books to recommend our listeners to pick up?
Oh, so many. So I had to narrow it down for this podcast, but I get the pleasure of getting to read a lot of books early before, because one of the benefits of being an author is you get to befriend your favorite authors and basically beg them to send you your books before they're out. So one of my favorite books from this past year is my fellow debut author, Ava Wilder's How to Fake It in Hollywood, which is fantastic. It's a little bit angsty. It's like one of those, got a little bit of an age gap romance, but it's basically about like kind of like a washed up Hollywood hero having and a fake relationship scenario with like a slightly younger, like, ingenue star. And I loved it because there's definitely some angst to it, but like the heroine doesn't put up with any BS. She's like very capable and assured. And I really do love like a strong, complex, like set of main characters. So I loved that one. But then her sequel, which I think everyone should put on their Goodreads bookshelf to read, is Will They or Won't They, which is coming out later this year. And that is basically a second chance, you know, hate to love scenario. And I am just obsessed with this book. I will not shut up about it.
I'm very excited for this book. I actually, like, it's an anticipated release for me. Yeah, I love How to Fake It in Hollywood. Tell us where you can find you online.
My website, jencomfort.com. And then for the most part, I'm on Instagram all the time at jen.comfort.author. And I'm still on Twitter just a little bit, but mostly on my Instagram and website.
That sounds good. Thank you, Jen, for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For a list of books mentioned and other romance recommendations, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com. Did you know you can purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore? With Libro.fm, you can pick up more than 250,000 audiobooks, including bestsellers and recommendations from real booksellers. You'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company, you know the name, but you'll be part of a different story, one that supports your local community. If you're new to audiobooks, there's a perfect way to squeeze into more reading to your busy life. Listen with the free Libro.fm app while you do your chores, walk your dog, relax at home. The Watch Read Next podcast has a special offer for our listeners. Get 2 audiobooks on Libro.fm for the price of 1 with your first month of membership. Use code WATCHREADNEXT. This offer is only valid for new members in Canada and the US. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? Watch Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.